Welcome to my podcast show, Greatest Hits. This is Chris Cafaro. This is my informal, ridiculous podcast show about photography, filmmaking, and music. And it's presented by my good friends, Edge Grip and Studio here in Los Angeles. And I'm joined by my wonderful friend, partner, and executive producer, Mr. Sean Magnon. Is that Magnon? Is it French?
Magnon. No, it's Irish.
I feel like it's French. It's be Magnon. Like filet mignon. Am I wrong?
Yeah,
I
don't know. Now I'm hungry.
Exactly.
I'm leaving. I'm going to go get some.
I know. Exactly. So tell me a little bit about yourself. You were saying.
Oh, right. My name is Sean Magnon. I was raised in Alaska. About 7 years ago, I decided that I didn't want to have a regular stable job anymore because, you know, that sucks. And decided to become a filmmaker, moved out to Brooklyn where I am right now, where it's, you know, hot and sunny and I kind of want fall to happen. I made 17 short films in the last few years. I'm currently finishing up my first narrative feature called Meme. And then I'm working with you right now on making Greatest Hits happen, my first documentary feature. And then... you know, taking over the world after that.
So first question I have ultimately is like when you're growing up in Alaska, what was there anything there that made you think, hey, I want to get into filmmaking? Did the bug kind of hit you there, or was it when you moved, got out of there? I mean, was there some sign like you were at the movies one day going, oh my God, oh, I want to do this.
I mean, I always loved movies. My family is big on, I grew up watching a lot of movies. Not necessarily like all the ones that like everybody else in my generation was, because like I'll be talking with people and sometimes they'll be like, wait, you never saw, you know, XYZ, or why are you not as into the Goonies as I am? And I'm like, because when I was 10, my parents decided they wanted to watch The Fly. Mm. And so I saw The Fly and Terminator and stuff when I was really young, and I really loved those movies, and you know, I grew up with those.
You have a certain genre that you like, that you gravitate towards?
I like a lot of different I like a lot of different genres. I think I tend to lean more towards the more offbeat stuff, the more something that pushes boundaries or pushes style in some way. So I'm a big like lately I'm a big Ken Russell fan. I'm a huge fan of what's that movie called again? Oh, Listomania, I think might be the greatest movie ever made. So
and do you sit there, are you visually, do you like movies visually, or is it about storytelling? I mean, how important is
I think it's a combination. I think it's you can't make a movie a purely visual movie is kind of nice, but in the end, like what is this all come together for? Because naturally, we're all human beings. We're all pattern makers. Find a story somewhere in everything. But I think there has to be an intended story in there. So I think storytelling is super important, but it's got to be paired with the visual, and it's got to be paired with, and the visuals have to be paired with a good story. I mean, they've got to work hand in hand.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just like, I've seen plenty of like really pretty movies where the story was utter garbage, and I'm just like, that was a giant waste of my money. Avatar.
Well, that's the way I felt about Prometheus. I felt like that was one of the most visually amazing movies ever made, but the story just was weak.
Oh, don't get me started on Prometheus. Yeah. That one pissed me off.
I know. It was just set up to be something amazing, and it looked amazing, and it was just like, you just went, oh, really? That's it?
And it had a great cast, too.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the cast was phenomenal.
Like everything but the story.
Exactly. Like, I don't know what was going on there, but it was messed up and it was not okay.
And you got to wonder, like, I always wonder, like, when the director's watching the final cut or the editor's editing on it, does anybody ever just say something? The editor turns to the director and says, you know what? This isn't making a hell of a lot of sense, Mr. Ridley. And then the Ridley goes, ah, shut the fuck up. Who cares? We're making money. It doesn't matter. Like, I mean, I just wonder, does Ridley watch it going, wow, that's the most amazing thing ever made? Or does he say, well, whatever, I don't care.
I think there's a certain point, and this reminds me of something that came up recently with what's a movie that came out, and I think it was Ridley Scott again. I think Exodus, which I didn't see it because I don't care, and but there was a thing that came up, like, it's all white people for ancient Egypt. And he made a comment about how, you know, there's a certain point at which you just do what you're told when you're making a movie at this budget. And I think that's, I think it doesn't matter now at a certain level who the director is.
No.
Like, it doesn't. It's all about the producers and the money people. And I mean, that makes me sad. And it's one of the reasons why I like where I'm at as an indie filmmaker. I mean, I would like to be making more money. I would like to be not be worrying about budget as much. But, like, there's a certain point where it's like, no, what you want and what the right thing to do would be.
Well, there's the
really the right thing to do would have been to, like, let's get some Egyptian actors in here for Exodus in particular. Or for Prometheus, it's like, this story's not working. And they knew that way in, but they also knew what they were doing was going to make them a lot of money.
Yeah,
so and that's what it comes down to.
And the money guys, at the end of the day, they don't care. They're just looking at the numbers.
They're just looking at the numbers, and it's like, I think the future of that kind of big budget filmmaking is the people who are going to be able to make it work are the people who can walk into the room with a good story and sell the money people on why it works.
And then I think it's also then they're going to go, like, the entire crew. And then if everybody has a track record of success, then the people are going to be like, oh, like, you know, whether it's a Marvel movie or something like that, they keep work. Yeah. They just surround themselves with the best of the best. But at the end of the day, I think the money people and the producers are the ones ultimately are kind of calling the shots.
Absolutely. There's no, like, I think big budget filmmaking, and I mean, I'm just guessing here because I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in my shitty little Brooklyn apartment and I'm just guessing about things. But I think, like, the big budget filmmaking is a lot more like what TV has been for a long time, which is the directors are in there to say, you know, they're there to sort of be the deciding, like, on set and, like, have some sense of, like, where all the pieces go.
Yep.
But in the end, they're not. It's not their vision,
right?
On that level, it's the vision of the money people, the producers, and even I was reading an article today, and I think it was, I don't remember. It was an online article. It came up while I was skimming through Twitter, well, before I decided to get my ass out of bed, and it was the director of photography for the upcoming Doctor Strange movie, which I'm really excited about because I'm hoping that's going to be a little bit more surreal because I actually have read, and I really like all the old, like, 1960s Doctor Strange, Steve Ditko drawn, like, surrealist, weird stories that they did for Doctor Strange. And he's talking about how it's going to be kind of like that, but he was also talking about how the role of the director of photography even has been reduced in a lot of these big budget films because so much is being shot for what's been pre-visualized.
Oh, totally.
And what's going through the VFX. And it's like, and this is also the same guy who shot the Age of Ultron movie that just came out. And he shot, but even before that, way back, a couple of years back, he shot Layer Cake, Matthew Vaughn's Layer Cake, which is one of my favorites. I love that. With Daniel Craig right before he became James Bond. And he's a good DP.
No, exactly. But this day and age in technology, I mean, this is what the DP's job now is. Yeah, and if you want to go make a movie and actually operate cameras and be on sets and be in locations, I mean, that's, you got to work on smaller budget films. And that guy might be saying it's different, but he ain't complaining. He's getting paid a shitload of money.
No. I mean, he certainly wasn't complaining. I think he was just talking about the shifting view of it. And I'm sure, you know, with that resume, you know, when he wants to do something where he's going to be able to, like, really craft something
as a
DP and really do something that's going to make him happy, he's not going to have too much trouble finding the work to do it.
No.
I
think it's always, for my career and for everybody I'm around, I always tell people, it's just the balance of art and commerce. You have to do the commerce jobs, you got to pay the bills, and then you got to go out and do the art jobs that to pay your soul. So it's, you just have to balance it all out. So let's talk about my stupid little thing here we're in the middle of.
I it's not stupid.
I know.
I know you're joking, but you know what? I really think that it's not a stupid project. I really, when we first talked about this like over a year ago.
I know.
And I was excited about it because I'm just like, because whenever I look at your work, and I think a lot of people, like, they kind of take a cursory glance because we've been sharing your stuff all over the place. We've been really annoying with this campaign.
Exactly.
But, you know, people take a cursory glance and they're like, oh, cool, he shot Pearl Jam. But no, when I tell people, no, go to the Kafaro Hits website, go there and look through things, people are like, wait a second. He shot, I recognize this photo.
Yeah.
Which George Harrison? Oh, hey, this Kenny Loggins. Like, literally yesterday I was texting with a friend of mine. And he's like, this Kenny Loggins photo is pretty great. Which, you know, I think a lot of people just skim over that Kenny Loggins photo in the tire swing. But, you know, it's all of
them. And if they only
knew
the story behind that photo.
And that's
and
that's
they will someday.
And so that's what we're doing. It's
I want to talk about Seed and Spark, because it was your idea. I'll give you all the credit here. Your idea to do Seed and Spark, because I knew nothing about crowdfunding. And, I don't even know what your version of the story of all this is, but I'll tell you my version was, like, I tell people all the time, like, in my meetings, I'm always saying, look, I had this fantasy about doing a documentary about this, but it was compared to the exhibitions and everything else I want to do, it was on the back burner. But then as things started developing and this idea, I was like, this is awesome. And the only way, but I had no money. So I remember back in October, my friend gave me $50,000 to get me started. And that lasted like 2 months. And, but like, I realized, okay, the only way this is going to happen is with crowdfunding. And so my question ultimately is you came to me and said Seed and Spark, which I'd never heard of. And I even told that to Erica before you, I'd never heard of them. Mm-hmm. So, but now that I've heard of them and now that I see what we're doing and now that I've met Erica and see their philosophy behind all this, I fucking dig it. I think it's full on. I think it's the best of the best for filmmakers. I mean, just in my humbled opinion. So my question to you is, like, how did you get involved with Seed and Spark? How did that all, where did you discover it and how did you get into it?
For me, it was, a couple of years ago. Yeah, it was maybe 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. I was sitting at home and a friend of mine texted me, hey, do you know this person? I said, I have no idea who that is. And he's like, she's doing this web series that you'd be into and she's crowdfunding for it. And you happen to have, I've become a scavenger since moving to New York. So among the things that I've like sort of acquired is I have this little old black and white TV that somebody had just like tossed it on the sidewalk, like two doors down from me. And I was like, does this work? Plugged it in, still works. I'm like, I'm going to use this for something because this is too unique not to use for some film prop or project. Right. And then my friend knew that I had that. And that, so he said, you should donate that because she's looking for something like that. And I was like, but like, how does that even work? I go to Seed and Spark and I see that you can loan items. And I'm like, well, that's genius because that's how I make most of my things happen, because pretty much everything I do has no budget and I'm always borrowing things. I'm either borrowing equipment, I'm borrowing props, I'm stitching things together. I'm like, well, this is amazing. So I donated the television to her, and I don't think it came to – I think she shifted how her production was going and she didn't end up needing it. But I kind of kept Seed and Spark in mind, and then about – I want to say it was like 6 months or a year later I was talking to some friends and it came up again. I said, that sounds really familiar. I go check out the website and I say, oh, okay, I remember this. And I donated to this person. And then I was working on a project. I was working on a short film last year called Time Signature. It was a short time travel film. As I was working on it, I was going to just do it, like throw it together with a few friends. And then as I told more and more people about the plot, I realized it was actually a good test bed for doing a crowdfunding campaign, which at that time was my fourth, I think.
What were you doing before?
I was using Kickstarter before.
Okay.
So I've done Kickstarter twice, and I did sort of a just ask friends and family through PayPal before, and I'm counting that as a crowdfunding campaign. But even though it was different, I did.
I'm just thinking sitting on a street corner with a cup begging for money. Yeah, that's crowdfunding.
That's pretty much crowdfunding in a lot of cases. But 2012, I did my first like what people normally think of as a crowdfunding campaign for my short film, Abel and Cain, and that was successful. I made an attempt at doing a crowdfunding campaign for my narrative feature in 2013, and that did not work out because honestly, and this is the thing that I bring up with people whenever I talk about crowdfunding, is that it's a lot of work and you have to be ready for it and you have to do your homework on it. And I was lazy about that one and it did not work out.
So you learned the hard, you basically learned from your mistakes.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, I would rather not have that, have had that been the way, but ultimately the movie is, it's a movie I'm shooting right now. I decided to do it out of pocket over an extended period of time. And my last day of shooting for that is at the end of this month. And ultimately I think the movie came out better than it would have if I had been successful and made it then. So, so after I did that, I'd heard about Seed and Spark. I decided Seed and Spark, in a lot of ways, I started paying a lot more attention to them as a company.
Right.
Their philosophy is all, it's not just about this project. Now, Kickstarter and the other places, they're great. I know people love using them and love them. But the thing about Kickstarter is Kickstarter kind of doesn't care about you. Like, and not that they have to or that they should or anything like that. But the difference is that Seed and Spark, if you're on their platform, they want you, they very, very specifically want you to succeed. They're only for filmmakers, and they understand how low budget, no budget filmmaking works. They know that it's not always about cash. They know that sometimes it's about
help.
You know, exactly. It's about help. It's about, you know, okay, I need a camera. And then somebody says, well, I've got a camera I'm not using that weekend, or I'm not using that week. And you know, they can, see, you can borrow it.
My theory, you know? And I think from what they told me is like, it's a crowdfunding a community for filmmakers, but it's kind of run by filmmakers. So they understand like both sides. They understand like what it is to, because they've done it themselves. So they understand the struggles, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it all.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, that's like, we're probably Kickstarter's like, we don't care. We just understand about making money and crowdfunding, and that's what it matters. We don't care about the end product or what you're going to do with it.
Without like disparaging Kickstarter, because I think it's a good, Kickstarter really sort of made this industry,
it is
crowdfunding. And, I think that Seed and Spark has this great niche in that they are filmmakers, and that they do care about, they know what it takes and not, they know what it takes to do a good crowdfunding campaign, but they also know what it takes to make a film. And that's why, you know, the loans thing, which, you know, we've done very well with our campaign with a loan from, Edge Grip and Studios. They've been very generous with what they've given us, and I think that's a huge part of making films. It's like working your relationships, and saying like, hey, you know, you want us to succeed. You have these things,
but I think,
and we want you to succeed in things. And so it's I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Everybody loves each other. Blah blah blah. And I think that's what makes Seed and Spark work. It's why I like working with them.
Yeah, I've been impressed, and I think that Erica impressed me just by the fact that she talked a lot about how you know the philosophy behind it, and you know the fact that where it came about, and kind of very organic about the whole thing. And I was impressed. And so far doing this project with you, you know, I'm learning a lot. I mean, every day I keep saying to all my friends here in LA, I am learning so much. It's ridiculous. And it's a lot. Seed and Spark, crowdfunding. You're right. It is a lot of work. It's a full-time fucking job.
Yeah.
I mean,
and even with the two of us, cause we're both, we're hitting it from both sides of the country. We're both working full-time on this to try to make this work. It's a lot. If you haven't done one, you don't quite understand the full extent of like just ridiculousness that it, and the amount of work it takes to get just one person,
yeah,
you know, one person through the door. So I totally respect, because there's plenty of campaigns that have done that have gotten, you know, hundreds, thousands of people through the door. So I'm like, that was a lot of work. That took them a lot to get there.
Yeah.
And so I totally respect that, you know.
It's been crazy. So let's segue from that to, since this is today is Wednesday the 5th, this is going to be up tomorrow the 6th. Let's talk about the here and now, about our project. And you probably have a better sense about what we're offering, and I'll let you talk about that. Like, if people listen to this, we need to let them know, all right, motherfuckers, you donate, you're going to get some cool shit.
Well, we've got great incentives. I mean, you know that they're all your things. They're all
I think they're amazing. I yell at all my friends. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? You guys, you know, beg me for photos all the time. Here, I'm giving you a chance to have them at like the all time best deal in the world.
Absolutely. Let's see, we've got the postcards, which are gorgeous. Like, I always feel like when I say postcard, people are like, ah, I don't know what that's.
I know, huh? It's like,
these are glossy, like high quality, like just gorgeous. Like, these aren't, you don't mail these to your grandma. You stick these on your wall. You get a little frame for it. And particularly, we're doing this for these last 2 weeks. We're talking again. You said we're talking today on August 5th, and so August 5th's postcard, once people hear this, you've already missed the chance to get that Eddie Vedder at home postcard, which I love. It's from that high angle, so it's a little hard to tell it's Eddie Vedder, but he's like got that guitar, and it's such a great photo. And such a photo that you can't really get anywhere else, because I think you were saying that was part of a shoot that you did for, was it Entertainment Weekly?
That was just us hanging out. For the day. So that's what's crazy about it.
Photo anywhere else.
Yeah, a lot of these pictures, to remind everybody, is like a lot of stuff is real personal. A lot of this stuff was done in a sense outside of the job and done. There's a lot of crazy stories behind all of this stuff.
So Thursday the 6th, we've got the Nirvana postcard, which this is one I think almost everybody that I've shown this photo to is like, I recognize that. It's Kurt sitting on the what's it called? The dumpster in that alley. And you got your story about this. I just entertains the hell out of me. I think you were saying that they were mostly hungover that day.
Yeah. We all had a long night the night before.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it's from, it's, this is like right after Dave Grohl joined the band. This is they hadn't even recorded Nevermind, I think you said.
Nope.
Like, so this is like proto Nirvana. This is like, you know, this is the definitive sort of before they were cool.
exactly. So what's the seventh? Do you have the seventh? I don't even know what you had. The seventh, eighth, and ninth lined up?
Yes, I do. So I've got like the whole couple weeks lined up. So if people listen to this podcast, I'm going to give you a heads up on the next couple days worth. So today, Thursday, August 6th, it's Nirvana. It's gorgeous. It costs you $5. Chris is going to sign it. You know, you want to put that on your wall.
Yep.
On the 7th, Friday the 7th, we got Maynard James Keenan of Tool in A Perfect Circle. I love this photo. I actually had no idea what this guy looked like before I saw the photo.
Not a lot of people do.
Yeah, because in fact, a few friends of mine who are like big fans of like Tool and Perfect Circle were like, I recognize him now. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
And then because I guess he's not super public about stuff, but it's the eyes. And that's one of the things that I think that you get really well in a lot of the photos is you get the eyes in there in such a way that there's in a lot of these photos. There's something more going on, I think, in a lot of them.
And you don't have to sell it to me. You can say
I'm just talking.
I always tell people, I'm pretty good at what I do.
I'm selling it to everybody who's listening. There's other people listening. This isn't just a conversation between the two of us. You know, once we get off this podcasting and I just talk to you about all the things I hate. No.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
But okay, so Friday the 7th is Maynard James Keenan. Again, signed by Chris. August 8th, Saturday, we got Morrissey. He was in the Smiths, right? So, I never really have any context for Morrissey.
So just keep going down the list because I got something to say.
And then August 9th is Sunday is Fiona Apple. And then Monday, I'm not going to tell you anything beyond Monday, but okay. Monday is Michael Hutchence.
Okay. So I want to say this. So this $5, they get a signed postcard by me.
Yes.
But what I think is cool is that they can get the full set if they wanted all of them, right? If they donate a little more.
Yeah, yeah, just a little bit more. What is it? Is it $50 for the full set?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the full set of 20, which they're great. I need to like make a wall here in the apartment.
I just want people to get the idea though that like, because I looked all the different type of crowdfunding campaigns I've ever looked at, like I always just felt like the gifts in return were just so cheesy. This is all high quality art. Whether it's a small postcard or it's beautiful big prints, it's quality. And I guarantee that. I'm signing them. I'm putting my name on this shit.
And we should talk about the prints too, because the prints, I think, you know, they're 13 by 19, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're 13 by 19 prints.
On 300 gram thick, beautiful watercolor papers that I love. It's my favorite paper in the world. And
it's great paper.
And you get to choose the ones you want out of the 100 photos. You get to pick.
Yeah.
If you pay enough to get, say, 10 prints, you get to go on the site and name the 10 you want. And then you get those 10 signed. So, and this
part. I have a couple here, and I've given a few away to friends just to be like, hey, here's what I'm working on, and I kind of owe you something, so here's this. Because these sell for what, like $300 or something like that, right? And I think the more you contribute to the campaign, the better deal you're getting. Because I think it starts at $250, so you're already saving $50. And then it's what? It's $500 for three of them. So you're saving like $400 at that part.
Don't ask me doing the math. But no, that's the point. I keep saying to my friends here and the people I talk to, it's like you're getting this incredible deal. And then, you know, on top of that, you get all those other wonderful little things and credits and all this other stuff. But the prints are like amazing.
They're gorgeous. They're honestly, like, there's even a few people who I've, you know, encouraged to do it, and they're like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I really need a print. I'm like, yeah, but maybe somebody who's like a giant Nirvana fan, and how great would it be to get that and give that to them for Christmas? And be like, this is amazing.
I can't get that. You're exactly anywhere. Right. I always tell, my joke always is, you know, you might not want it for yourself, but they make great gifts, you know? And people, honestly, I've done that a million times where I've given people, you know, prints that they've given away as gifts. And then they call me, oh my God, that was like the greatest thing ever. My friend was so excited. Da, da, da. I just did that recently, actually. Gave up some Pearl Jam prints to somebody and they gave them to their boyfriend. And the boyfriend was very, very happy. Very happy. Yeah. So let's change.
It might just save your relationship.
Exactly.
Not that their relationship was bad. I don't know them, but I'm just saying if things aren't going well, I don't know.
So
I'm actually tempted. Honestly, I'm tempted to ask you for. Have I sent you the Steve Jones Instagram? Because I discovered
his
Instagram.
Yeah, I saw it.
It's ridiculous.
He's crazy.
He seems like a madman, and I almost want that photo now.
Yeah, he's crazy like that. He's amazing. He's one of the most brilliant people I've ever met.
He's delightful.
All right, so we've got a few minutes left here. I want to run by these basics, and you got to give short, beautiful answers here because this is part of our campaign as well as these stories, not my stories, but your stories. So because I know I've read some of the stuff online that you've put up, but for now, what was your first concert?
My first concert was Aerosmith in 1998 in Anchorage, Alaska. It was actually the second show that they added because the first one sold out in like a couple of hours. And it's actually I missed it because my friend who I went with at the time, she had to go home early, so we had to leave the concert relatively early. We saw Aerosmith play, so we didn't miss anything great, but Steve like tripped and like banged up his knee or something like that, and he was actually out for a couple of months. Like they had to cancel a bunch of tour dates after that show. So we were the last ones to see him for like 6 months.
Wow. And what was your first album or cassette or CD, depending on your generation here?
So I like to tell people that it was Sgt. Pepper. But the truth is like, as far as like stuff that I spent money on, because oftentimes it would be like, oh mom, dad, buy me this.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably if you count the, oh mom, dad, buy me this, probably the first one that I got was the 1990-1991 cassette of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles HBO special, like album, which is ridiculous. And that was such a huge phenomenon at the time. That's such a thing for my generation is what, I don't think anybody, like not even Harry Potter is half as big as I think as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were when I was a kid. It was ridiculous how big that got.
Well, my time, it was all about Johnny Quest.
Oh, I love Johnny Quest.
And so that was for me. Now, okay, so first concert, first album, first music experience we've talked about. Like, you know, not I want to say, you were kind of saying backstage, but just first big, I should say not the first, but like the biggest musical experience that you ever had.
the biggest musical experience that I ever had. You know what? I interviewed for the local newspaper in, I think it was 2000. No, it was 1999. I interviewed Gene Simmons of Kiss. I was working for, just on the phone. Yeah. I didn't get to meet the man, for better or worse. I was working for the local newspaper in the teen section. I was still in high school at the time because I'm a relatively young whippersnapper. And I knew that they were coming to Alaska for the first time since 1975, I think. And the entertainment's editor had gotten an interview with Paul Stanley. And at the time, I was a really big Kiss fan. And I still enjoy Kiss. I think they're a really fun band. But I looked at that and I'm like, he got an interview with Paul Stanley? I'm like, you don't get an interview with Paul Stanley. If Kiss is coming to town, like, Paul Stanley's cool, but you talk to Gene Simmons because Gene Simmons is the salesman.
Yep.
And I got so many compliments for that interview from people like in that newsroom there in Anchorage, because all I did was set up Gene Simmons to talk about himself for like an hour. That's and not... they even like cut other articles.
All I can tell you is
to give it the room.
I've spent time with Gene Simmons, and what you did was smart, because all you do is you just let him talk about himself, and that you set him up. You just say, so tell me, what do you like? And he'll just 3 hours later, he'll tell you, give you everything.
The only question, I haven't really told anybody this before, so here's an exclusive for the podcast. The only question that I cut out because there was not a good response to it was, hey, so, because it was a stupid fucking question, is, hey, so are you guys going to like stick around and maybe, I don't know, do some outdoorsy like fishing or whatever, which was stupid for a couple of reasons. Because his response was, no, why would I do that? And it was stupid because, like, no, this is Kiss. Why would they fucking do that? That's not them. And two, it was stupid because it was January. They were coming in January to Anchorage, Alaska. So maybe what were they going to do? Skiing? I can't. Although I would like to see a music video that's just Kiss skiing, though. Yeah. Now that I say that.
Like do a version of Help kind of thing with them skiing down. Well, I think we covered it, the basics here. Let's the talking points of, hey, everybody, fucking donate, join us. You get cool shit in return, right?
Yeah.
Crowdfunding is great. A lot of work, but we want to make this happen. I know I want to make this happen. God, do I want to make this happen.
And the truth is that, you know, we're putting a lot of work in to get a lot of people to join us on this crowdfunding campaign, because we think people are going to like get excited about like these stories, because they're cool stories. It's so many great artists, but also the truth is we put all this work in, like, we're going to succeed at this campaign. It's just about choosing whether or not you're going to be part of it, because this movie's happening. This project is happening on so many different levels, no matter whether or not people join us or not. So
yeah, it's like
get on the bus. We're not waiting for you. Get on the bus.
Trust me, it is happening. I have no choice. Like, I don't have any other options going on my side right now. It is happening. So tell everybody how we find you on the internets. Drop some tags and things like that, because I know how to find you, but people listening don't.
On Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr, if you're on Tumblr, I'm Uncle Sean. That's all one word, UncleSean. A couple of people will have jokingly, like the way it's written out, people have thought, like, I thought it said unclean Sean, and I'm like, that's actually probably accurate.
Right.
Or a couple of people have said, I thought it was supposed to be pronounced Unclesian, and I just realized it was Uncle Sean. That's happened to me twice recently.
Yeah.
And then on Facebook, it's just Sean Mannion. You can also find my sort of production shingles Facebook page, 4 Mile Circus. That's the number 4, the word mile, and then the word circus, all as one word. And that's my old work on it. So.
And then we have our greatest hits page on Facebook, right?
And then we have our greatest hits page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/CuffaroHits, Cuffaro Hits.
Exactly.
And that's our Twitter is CuffaroHits. And that has been blowing up today with George Michael fans
talking about their first concert, or at least their first George Michael concert. They have been very vocal, and I'm actually a little disappointed in our grunge fans and our metalheads. They need to come and talk to us, because I want to hear about their, I want to hear about their first like Puddle of Mud concert.
I think, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go, not right this second, but I will post some cool pictures of George Michael live pictures that they will have not seen before. Just for them.
Oh wait, no, because you were on the whole Faith tour, right?
Yes, I did.
Were you at Barcelona?
No, I wasn't in Barcelona. I didn't do Europe. I just did Australia and America. I didn't get to do Europe or Japan, which really pissed me off. But that's the way it goes.
But yeah, there's definitely a couple people where that was their first concert, was on the Faith tour.
Yeah.
So and that's the one you were at, and I mentioned it to people. I was like, hey, Chris was a photographer for the Faith album and the tour and the everything. It's like you got some of the most famous George Michael photos than any of us have ever seen.
Exactly. So let's say goodbye. Let's wrap this up. It's so today is Thursday. It'll be Thursday when this goes up. But thank you for coming on. Thank you for the stories. And I'm gonna say you can follow me at kafarophoto.com is my website. All my stuff is Kafaro Photo. Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. And the website for the project is kafarohits.com. Check it all out and check out my Facebook page and all that other blah, 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 blah stuff. So we'll go from there. So thanks, Sean. I'm sure I'm going to talk to you in a little while, but I got to go run and take care of business.
Cool.
Talk to you later.
Later.